Blog Talk Radio.
You are now listening to Changing the Conversation with Punch TV Studios CEO Joseph Collins. Listen live as we discuss the Punch TV Studios IPO 2.0, funding for your film, acting in film and television, new affiliate stations, and all things Punch TV Studios. Meet the stars of your favorite Punch TV Studios film and television shows and find out how you can be a part of the company that is revolutionizing media. Call 657-383-1974 and join in on the conversation. And now your host, Punch TV Studios CEO Joseph Collins.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining us on another episode of Changing the Conversation with Punch TV Studios CEO Joseph Collins. I am your co-host, Sharifa Hardy, and today's show is even more amazing than I won't say yesterday's show, because yesterday's show we actually had Mr. Collins in the punch bowl. In these days, with everything going on at Punch TV Studios, that is a rare event. But today we have a special guest on the line, Ms. Lauren Hope, who is a blogger, public speaker, mental health advocate, and journalist. So we're going to bring Ms. Lauren Hope on the line momentarily to have her share her dream, after losing her dream job to depression. She shares her story of survival and overcoming. But before we bring Ms. Lauren Hope on the line, we want to take a moment to introduce our co-host for this show, A Bottle of You and A Bottle of You for Me. Are you with me this morning?
Yes, we are. Good morning or good afternoon.
It's morning here in Cali. It's still 10 o'clock. It's still early. We're just starting our day.
Yeah, you know, it's nice to be in California and have that opportunity to kind of lay back, you know, out on the beach first thing in the morning and then go into the office. That doesn't quite work over here.
Hey. I didn't say all of that. I've been in the office at 7:30 this morning at Punch TV Studios. It's just early here. But Monday, I've been at work for hours talking to everyone on social media, promoting the show, inviting everyone to tune in to Changing the Conversation. So we do have quite a few people on the line. As always, we invite you, if you want to join the conversation in the punch bowl, please press 1. If you want to listen, that's fine. Feel free to listen. But if you want to jump into the punch bowl with a question or comment, press 1. If you're listening to this show on your computer and you want to join us in the punch bowl, give us a call, 657-383-1974. Again, that number is 657-383-1974. So we are going to get started with today's show. But before we do that, yes, A Bottle of You.
Hello?
Yes.
Did you say something to me? I couldn't quite hear you. You're on the West Coast.
It's traveling a long distance. So before we get started and we bring our guests, I am going to stop for a brief commercial break, and we are going to be right back.
Are you an actor looking for your next role? Are you looking to audition to be cast in the next Hollywood project? One amazing way to do this is to work with Punch TV Studios, making movies and making magic. Join the actors group at Nabuki.com to find out about upcoming film projects and opportunities. It's a great place to network. Do you, Nabuki?
I'm Joseph Collins, CEO of Punch TV Studios. Growing up in South Central Los Angeles, my mother was on welfare. She fought day and night to get off welfare and give her children a better life. She would always say to me, "Son, this is the best that I can do, but you can do better." And I promised that I would do better and that I would be the catalyst for change in our community. Just like I promise you that together we can build a multi-billion-dollar media company that brings wealth back to our community, that resurrects blighted areas and puts people back to work. Be part of the promise Be part of change. Invest in Punch TV Studios for only $1 per share. Call now, 310-419-5914. That's 310-419-5914. Or visit our website at punchtvstudios.com.
Visit our website at punchtvstudio.com. So please help us give a warm welcome to Ms. Lauren Hope and thank her for her courage. Are you with us this morning, Ms. Hope?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am, I can hear you. How are
oh,
you this morning?
Wonderful. I'm well. How are you?
I am excellent, excellent. Thank you for joining us on today's episode of Changing the Conversation. So tell us about your journey. Tell us your incredible story of survival and overcoming.
Well, first of all, I just want to say thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to share my story with you all today. So I was diagnosed with depression / anxiety when I was 16. And when I was growing up, mental health wasn't a discussion that any of us were having. And so I felt like I had to hide the fact that I had this mental illness for a really long time. And it got the better of me in my late 20s. And I had my first suicide attempt when I was shortly before my 30th birthday and fell into a major depressive episode. And from that, I had to walk away from my high-powered television job as a journalist here in Hampton Roads, Virginia. I lost my condo, a good relationship with my family. Depression literally took everything from me. But I'm really happy and thankful to say that I'm coming out on the other side. And now I blog about my mental health journey. I'm a public speaker, mental health advocate, telling people to really speak up about their mental illness, to really not hide in the shame anymore of that. You know, we're losing too many lives to suicide because people don't feel like there's help out there. Now I'm just all about sharing good, healthy mental health. And a lot of that has just come from sharing my own story.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about, before we go into where you are now, let's talk a little bit about your journey. Now, especially in the African-American community, many people, it's been my experience, my personal experience, that many people don't want to even acknowledge depression.
Right.
We don't necessarily take it serious. We look at it as if it's something, oh, she'll shake it off, oh, she'll get over it, you know, as opposed to in maybe in other races or other communities, that it's easier for them to go speak to someone, go see a therapist, go see a doctor. In our communities, it's been my experience that there's been a negative connotation about anything, you know, as far as mental health. Now, we may go to the doctor if our leg is cut off or our leg is falling off because we don't like to go to the doctor anyway. But when it's regards to our mental health, it's something that it's been my experience, we don't take as serious. Has that been your experience?
Definitely. And as a whole, mental health has a stigma just because of the history that we've had with mental health in our society. It used to be one of those things that, you know, we hid. We put people in institutions. It was something that nobody was talking about. And in the Black community, I think there is a very big stigma towards going to see a therapist or taking an antidepressant or even talking or sharing with somebody that you are feeling episodes of depression or sadness. And, yeah, I do hear from a lot of people, oh, shake it off, you'll be fine. I'll tell you, my parents are really amazing, educated people, but, you know, they warned me to not talk about my mental illness. They were like, you know, this is going to keep you from getting jobs. You know, people are going to think that you're crazy. The hard thing about that is that it creates a shame that prohibits people from getting help. And there is nothing crazy or unusual about having a mental health, having a mental illness. I mean, there are so many studies out there that show that it is so, so common, particularly depression. And so that's part of the reason why I'm so vocal about sharing my story. particularly to the Black community, because I have seen a lot of power in going to therapy, seeing a psychiatrist, and there really is no shame in it, but I think it takes more people being brave enough to talk about it, right? And us having these conversations with our children and being able to see the red flags if somebody is having a mental health crisis. So it's really about breaking down the stigma and having good, healthy conversations about it.
Okay. So when you began to feel depressed, what was it where you knew, I have to do something about this? What was it personally in you where you didn't just feel sad or just feel like, you know, because sometimes even like, what they call it, postpartum depression. After having a baby, you know, your life changes. A lot of women feel sad. What made you realize that it wasn't just a period of your life that you were going through? Maybe you were in school or you had just changed jobs, where you said, no, I need some help, as opposed to I'll get over this.
Right. And depression is a really key signal. If you are exhibiting certain symptoms for 2 to 3 weeks at a time, you are probably going through a depressive episode. Loss of appetite or increased appetite, restlessness, feelings of worthlessness and hopelessness, thoughts of suicide. So for me, my first suicide attempt was the wake-up call. Like, I had become very, like, morbidly obsessed with death, and I felt so overwhelmed and tired and angry and frustrated and sad that death felt like an escape. Like, and that's when I knew that it was time to do something. And so I voluntarily went to a psych ward, which is hard for a lot of people to do, and really just took some time to take some rest. I'll say, though, it was challenging for me. Even after that, I was in psych ward for about 5 days, and when I got back to work, I still couldn't function. I was suffering from anxiety attacks, insomnia. I had no appetite, and I knew that something was wrong because I have, like, kind of become overeducated about, you know, my depression. And I knew while it was hard, the best thing for me to do was to walk away from my job. But I will say to people, though, that they don't have to take the drastic step. I want to, like, educate people about what to do when you're in a crisis. I don't think a lot of people know that if you are suffering from a mental health crisis, you can file for FMLA leave, which is the Family Medical Leave Act, and you can take time to go to a psych ward or go to therapy or get on good meds. But for me, the breaking point when I knew that I needed to get help was when I started having suicidal ideation or suicidal thoughts. And that should be a red flag for everybody.
Now, you said your first suicide attempt. After your first suicide attempt, you checked yourself into the psych ward. Was it, like, the same day? Was it immediately after? Did you take a few days? And then when you went into the psych ward, what was that conversation like?
A lot of times when you are hurting and you're depressed and you're suicidal, you don't think about how your death will affect the people around you. Suicide is not something that just hurts the person. It leaves lasting wounds in families and communities. I mean, I've seen it as a journalist. Yeah. And so the thing that really prompted me to reach for help that day was thinking of my Down syndrome sister. And I knew that she wouldn't understand that I had passed. Like, she's 27, but she's mentally sick. And so that's what prompted me to reach for help, like realizing what my death would have done to my family. And, you know, honestly, I think that there is a lot of, stereotype and miseducation about psych wards. I think, you know, the media hasn't done the best job of portraying them. But it's really a place where you get to focus on you, find the meds that are working, you're in group therapy. They're putting you on a good diet. You're being monitored. And you know what else was the best thing for me in the psych ward was realizing that I wasn't alone. There was a mother in there who was a psychiatric nurse who had had her first suicide attempt and had been struggling with depression. And when I saw how common it was, it normalized it for me. And it helped me accept that, yes, depression is part of my life, but it doesn't have to define me or define my dreams.
So how long were you in the psych ward the first time?
The first time was 5 days. Generally, well, in the state of Virginia, after a suicide attempt, you're kept for at least 72 hours, like the 72-hour hold. And then you're really under close supervision of a psychiatrist who is monitoring how you're adhering to drugs, how you're cooperating with other people, are you eating, and once you're stable, that you make a plan, like a crisis plan. What are you going to do if you feel suicidal? Who are your support systems? And then they really try to link you up with a therapist to keep you in recovery. And so I learned some really good coping mechanisms there, and I think more people probably need that help and don't take it because they're ashamed.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said your first suicide attempt. How many times in total did you actually attempt suicide?
About 4. It was really bad. It was, I don't think people understand how dark depression can be. Like, the thought of waking up in the morning was agonizing. I lost my drive and energy. Nothing tasted good. The world just felt like it was black and white. And I lost myself. Like, I felt dead inside. And after I stopped trying, I just stopped living. Like, I, you know, a lot of people who are severely depressed don't take care of their hygiene. I didn't shower. There were months at a time where I didn't leave the house, and I developed this really tense social anxiety where it was hard for me to be around people. So depression is, it's, I don't know, I can't even explain it. It is one of the toughest battlefields of the mind that, you know, you could ever think of.
Okay. Now, when was your last suicide attempt?
A year and a half ago. So I've been in recovery for a year and a half.
Okay. Now, you said when you went into the hospital the first time, it gave you ways to cope, different techniques, different things that you can do. Were you able to utilize those? Did they work for you, I guess is the question.
I mean, a lot of it is putting it into practice. One of the major things that I learned was having a work-life balance. I was in a really high-pressure cooker job where I was working nights as a night reporter, reporting on every murder and crime in the city. Mm. And that was obviously trauma that I hadn't experienced. So, learning when to set boundaries at work and take time to sleep and rest. I had to form some really healthy boundaries with people that were not healthy in my life. That's important, having a really good supportive support system. Writing has been so key for me. So I blog a lot, and I'm in the process of writing a book about my journey. But even if you don't share your story, writing it is a way to kind of get it out of your system. And I encourage anybody who's going through a depressive episode or anybody who's having a mental health crisis to really write about your issues. I have hobbies that I do when I'm feeling sad. I work out. You know, power walking is great because it increases your serotonin levels, which is the things in your brain that keeps you happy. And so putting those things into practice has kept me in recovery. And honestly, I've reconnected with my faith. That is huge. I feel like a lot of my depression, I felt hopeless, and reconnecting my relationship with Christ has given me a hope and passion for life that I didn't have before.
Now, I have actually a family member of mine, one of my family, who suffers from not depression but schizophrenia. And one of the things, you know, as you know, and like you mentioned, you don't go through this alone. This is, you know, it affects everybody in the family because there were always episodes and always crises and things where the family had to get involved. But when she had her first episode and she had her first breakdown, she actually disappeared for days, and she had her 2-year-old son in the house. And so somebody came in, and her 2-year-old was in the house by himself, and nobody could find her. And then a couple of days later, they actually found her wandering in and out of traffic, and she was in, I guess, this state. They called it mania at the time, but she wasn't herself, and they put her on the hold and put her in the hospital. But one of the things that the doctors explained was that people can have this illness, this disease. People can suffer from these symptoms without having a full-on mental breakdown. And so one of the things that they helped her understand is at that time she was working full-time. She was going to school part-time. She had a two-year-old son that she was raising alone and having a lot of drama and conflict with the child's father. And it was so much, you know, going on that at the time her mind literally just said, I can't take it anymore. I can't deal with it anymore. And she needed a break. So what they did is they gave her a lot of coping mechanisms and ways to cope. And one of the things that I thought was so profound, and it just seemed so, you know, like they say, the KISS, keep it simple, stupid. It was so profound and made a big difference in her life, but it was the simplest thing. The doctor actually gave her permission to say, it's too much. You know, right now, that's too much for me. And not to, like you mentioned, setting boundaries, but so often as women, especially as Black women, we don't have permission. Nobody has ever given us permission to say, right now I need some time for myself. Right now I need to take care of me. Right now I need to make sure that I am the focal point for my life. And we try to do all these things and be all these things for other people. And I think it was some of the coping techniques and the fact that she actually went to the hospital, like you said, and was able to just take care of herself, that when she came out, it made a big difference, even with the illness, because the doctors told her, they said that had not those stressors came in her life, she may have had the illness unnoticed, you know, for the rest of her life.
Right. And that is so important. There are a lot of exterior, like life can push someone into a depressive episode or into a mental health crisis. And I think that's why it's important that everybody realizes the red flags in themselves, to notice if you are feeling overwhelmed or stressed or sad for long periods of time, or if you're feeling anxious, it is okay to say that I'm not okay. That's okay. And you're right. For a lot of Black women, we're taught that we have to be the superheroes. We have to take care of the family. We have to carry everybody's burdens on our backs, but this is really not healthy. And so I've had to learn a coping mechanism for me is being able to speak up for myself and say, no, I can't do this shift, or no, I need rest. I was recently at a job that was really, really exhausting, and I was working 10, 12-hour days, and it was stressing me out, and I could feel my insomnia coming back. And mm-hmm. I actually went to the boss, and I said, it is important for me to get sleep for my mental health. The stress of this job is causing me insomnia. Being your own advocate is so important. I also want, people to understand that a lot of times some people will go through a depressive episode of their life. They'll maybe go on a med, or they'll see therapy. They'll never have to deal with it again. Sometimes the loss of a job, a loss of a loved one, a pet, a stressful situation can put a strain on our mental health. There are other people like me that will live with depression for their entire life, that will take an antidepressant for their entire life, but it's a lot more common to go through a depressive episode than a lot of people think. And like your family member, a lot of life stressors can contribute to that. And so whether you have an illness or not, I think it's important for more people to protect their mental health. And that means taking time for yourself, sleeping, eating well, being sure you have positive people in your life that are pouring into you. It's a good way to protect your mental health.
Right, and I believe that what one of the things that is so important is just being okay with whatever it is that you feel, whatever it is that you need. So often we're taught to disregard our feelings. If we're feeling sad or if we're feeling whatever it is, to, you know, to actually feel those feelings. And one of the ways that in the military, you know, not that I've been in the military, but they talk about, you know, lack of sleep, you to torture people, you know, you keep them up for days and days and days. And even my relative, you know, you talked about some of the signs and the symptoms of when things are going to happen. But as a family, one of the symptoms that we know there's going to be an episode is when we start getting phone calls at 3 a.m. and she's wide awake and she hasn't been asleep for days. That's like, it's not necessarily what she says or what she does, but when it's 3 a.m. or 2 a.m. and it's the middle of the night and we're like, okay, have you slept? And she's like, oh, I went to sleep on Tuesday, you know, and it's Friday. And we're like, okay, you know, here it comes. And as a family, we kind of prepare and recognize it, but we also try to make sure that she gets plenty of rest and that she doesn't do the things that send her back off into these mental health issues.
And that's great. And I wish more families and friends were doing that. When I was going through my depressive episode, like one of the things that depressed people do is that they will isolate themselves from people, friends, you know, the world. And when I was coming out of my depression, so many people, my friends were like, gosh, we knew you were struggling, but we didn't know what to do. We didn't, we felt helpless. Sometimes just being there for somebody is powerful. And it goes back to that, to a saying that I hear, that I've heard a lot of people say, if you see something, say something. If you have a friend that maybe has checked out, is, you know, not doing their normal routine, maybe they're expressing a lot of things on social media where I'm sad or I'm angry or whatever, these could be cries for help. And I wish and I encourage more people to be involved in our loved ones' mental health. I think it's so great that you all are conscious of the signs in your family member and you're there. Don't be afraid to ask, are you okay? Do you need someone to talk to? I just got a new job with the city of Portsmouth here in Virginia as a peer specialist, which helps people with mental health issues and substance abuse. And I was reading the pamphlet, and it talks about a crisis plan. And it talks to loved ones. You basically write to loved ones and say, this is how you know that I need help. If I'm doing X, Y, and Z, I need you to intervene. I think we could save so many people's lives and keep their depressive episodes or their mental health crises being shorter if we took the moment to get involved and to speak up. Like, I mean, I can't tell you how good it would have been if somebody had come and knocked on my door when I hadn't been out in 4 weeks and said, hey, what's going on? I love you. Let me hear you. How can I help you?
Yes. But we don't know what to say, because I think, you know, we always tend to think that somebody will shake it off, that they'll get over it. You don't really know that fine line between somebody's a little down, they're a little sad. You know, people who are going through something, maybe they're going through a divorce. You're like, oh, they're going through it, they'll be okay. But we don't necessarily want to get involved or even recommend, because we don't know, you know, if that person needs a specialist or they need to go see a doctor or they need to go see a therapist. And people who are, even if they're going through it, a lot of people who are going through it, they don't want to be labeled. You know, my relative, you know, she was in the psych ward, in the mental hospital at least 7 or 8 times. She would go in and out. And to the point for her now, and this is not me, this is her, like she'll literally, like it's a joke to her to a certain extent now, because they have listed her as her, because of her condition, this is a condition she has for the rest of her life. She can't work, she can't function in society, she's on permanent Social Security, you know, so anything that she does, it's like, oh, because of my condition, I can't do this. I can't, because of my condition, I can't do that, you know. But some people, they don't want to be labeled, and so they do everything to prove, like one of the things that she does, even with her condition, is she's better than anyone that I've ever met in my life at finding jobs. Like, everybody mm-hmm. in the state of California can be unemployed. She will have a job by Monday. Monday morning, I don't know how she does it. Seriously, honestly. She will have a job by Monday. But what happens is she'll go, she gives amazing interviews, she does the interview, and then Monday she gets the job, she starts the job. Tuesday she gets the job. Wednesday she calls me. And she says, you know what, I decided I don't want to work that job because, you know, it's too hard for me to get to work by 9 a.m. And, you know, if I'm there at work longer than 1 p.m., then that's too much, too hard for me, so I can't do the job. So by Wednesday, she's quit the job because of her condition, and she's back at the house doing what she does. But I like for her to want to get back in the workforce and into the world, but the family knows that by Wednesday she's not going to do this job. So these are the things that, you know, some people don't want to be labeled as having a condition, so they fight it and they try to do things that even their doctors and professionals said, you know what, that's not good for you.
Right. And acceptance is a hard thing, and I think the reason why it's hard is because our society makes mentally ill or having a mental diagnosis synonymous with crazy. And if we think about it, in the media, what are the instances where we're really talking about mental illness? We're talking about it when a famous person has committed suicide or a child has committed suicide, or there has been some mass shooting or casualty and that person had a mental health issue. Because
yes.
those are the most prominent images that we see, of course it would be hard for anybody to stand up and say, I have this bipolar disorder or borderline personality mm-hmm. disorder or schizophrenia, because I don't think that we do a good enough job of showing the spectrum of mental health. Like I said, there are some people mm-hmm. that will go through a mental health crisis, then they'll never experience again. There are some people who are schizophrenic who will be on disability for the rest of their life, but there is a spectrum. And I want to be part of the change of people who are showing what living with your mental illness looks like, living with it, living in recovery, having a job, yeah. having good, healthy relationships, going to therapy. And I admit that for me started with acceptance. I went to therapy. My therapist would say, it's like being a diabetic. You know, would a diabetic not take their insulin? Because for me, I felt that my being depressed was like this weakness. I felt very weak. And so I would say, I'd feel great, but I'd stop taking my medication and I would spiral into a depressive episode, or I'd have an anxiety attack that would hospitalize me, all because I couldn't accept it. And the moment yes. that I accepted that it's a part of me but not all of me, and that I can live with this, and there is power in living with this, that I am conquering and overcoming my mental illness every day. I couldn't live in recovery if I hadn't made that choice. And I want to be part of the people that are showing that you can live with it, and there's no shame in accepting it. I mean, if you think about it, it is a disease. These are diseases of the mind, something we cannot mm-hmm. see, but we feel internally. And so why should we beat ourselves up and not get treatment and feel guilty and ashamed and alone for something that's really out of our control?
Absolutely. So what we're going to do is talk a little bit more about living with it once we return from this brief commercial break.
Awesome.
As a filmmaker, you're brimming with ideas. But do you need help bringing your ideas to life? That's where Punch TV Studios comes in. We offer independent filmmakers a place to call home, as well as practical help, advice, resources, support, and most importantly, funding. Join the Filmmakers Group at Nabuki.com and network with industry professionals. Do you, Nabuki?
I'm Joseph Collins, CEO of Punch TV Studios. We have a network of television stations around the country. And today, we are proud to announce that we have just launched our newest television station across all of Southern California. KILM is the new Punch TV. Check your local listings on Direct, Dish, Spectrum, Charter, Frontier, and over the air for free. From the desert to the sea, it's Punch TV. For more information on the second phase of the Punch TV Studio stock offering for only $1 per share, call 310-419-5914, 310-419-5914, or log on to PunchTVStudios.com. That's PunchTVStudios.com.
Investing in IPO carries a degree of risk. There is no guarantee that your investment will be secure. Do not invest if you cannot afford to lose your investment.
If you are just now tuning in to Changing the Conversation, we have been having an amazing conversation. It's been phenomenal. We have been speaking with Ms. Lauren Hope. We do have listeners on the line. If you want to join the conversation, please press 1 so we know you have a question or a comment. If you're listening to this show on your computer and you want to jump into the punch bowl, please give us a call, 657-383-1974. Again, that number is 657-383-1974. Make sure to post the show, tweet the show, post it on your LinkedIn, text it to your friends. Let everyone know at Punch TV Studios we are changing the conversation. We are having discussions and conversations about real things that are happening in today's world. Today we are speaking with Ms. Lauren Hope, who is using her struggles and her pain and her depression to help someone else. And that's one of the things that I always talk about, is that you can't have a testimony without a test. People who have heard my story know that I was laid off 6 or 7 times. I was homeless a couple of times. I've been married and divorced twice. I've gone through so much, but I know that each and every struggle, each and every pain, each and every heartbreak that I had, it wasn't for me. It was for me to be able to have empathy for someone else. So on this journey isn't about us. It's about the people we can help and the people who will benefit by the struggles that we have gone through. So in this second hour or second half hour of Changing the Conversation, we're going to talk a little bit more about what we can do to live a positive, happy, glowing, beneficial life. Ms. Lauren Hope, are you still with us?
Yes, ma'am, I'm still here.
Okay, so what we have to do now is we have to give hope. Ms. Hope, we're going to give some hope and let people know that, you know, you've been through it. You've made it through it. What's the upside? What are you doing as a public speaker to share your story?
So I will say that I am a woman of faith, and what prompted me to start sharing my story, because I never, ever in a million years imagined that I would be speaking so candidly about my mental health journey. I was watching Joyce Myers one day, and she had quoted 1 Peter 5:8. Which, you know, in paraphrasing says, the devil roars like a lion. And she says in that moment, she says, do you know that the enemy uses depression to rob God's people of their joy? And so in that moment, I felt God say to me, I need you to write about your depression. I want people to understand how a intelligent, educated, middle-class black woman lost everything to mental health, because here's what's going to happen. It's not going to only set you free from the shame, but it's going to liberate other people, because there are people out there suffering in silence and they think they're alone, but if they see that someone like you has been through it and is overcoming, it's going to be one of the best testimonies about me, and it's going to help people accept their struggle. So I wrote a blog last year in 2016 called Standing in My Truth, which talks about my suicide attempts, which talks about losing my job, walking away from my job, and what depression did to my life. I was blown away at the amount of people who were also hurting that were messaging me and saying, I've had a suicide attempt, or I applaud your bravery, or the fact that you're living and standing in your truth makes me want to stand in mine. that blog was read by about 1,000 or so people. And so then I was asked to speak at churches and a community service board, which is a mental health organization usually run by cities that help people, said, we want you to come talk at a suicide walk. So the last year I did about 4 suicide prevention speeches talking about my journey and encouraging people to choose life. And so now as a speaker, I not only speak about the pain, but I also speak about the hope. Because a lot of depression made me feel like there was nothing worth living for. And for me, and I can't explain it other than having a relationship with Christ, God restored in me who I was and that I had value. And when I felt like my life had value, it made me want to fight for that life. And fighting meant taking my antidepressant, going to therapy, getting up every day and making an effort, looking for a job, even though I had been out of work for almost 2 years. So for whatever it is for people, I feel people need to reconnect with the thing that brings them hope. That is one of the first steps in recovery.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us your blog, Ms. Hope, where people can
so
read your journey?
Yes, ma'am. So if you Google me, if you Google Good Girl Chronicles, I am a self-proclaimed goody two-shoes who chronicles her life. That is my blog. I write about my mental health journey, my love life, my television career, my spirituality, and it has given me an opportunity to have real discussions with people about mental health and encourage them to get help and show them that there is so much help out there, but it takes speaking up about it.
No, I definitely agree, and I've never personally had a suicide attempt. Now, I am human, and I can tell you there are times where I'm like, okay, Lord, is this the best life it's going to get? I might just want to check out. But I always believe anything in life, you have to love something or someone more than yourself. And my children have always been that driving force for me. And I would always think, okay, if I wasn't here, what kind of legacy would I leave my 2 children where they had to go on with life knowing that their mother committed suicide or that, you know, this is a stigma that I would add on to their lives and make it that much harder for them.
Right.
So that was always my thing, my children. You know, even if you listen to my speaking engagements, everything I've done, I built my first website in 1994 because I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. It wasn't because of the internet or all these things. I just knew in 1994 the only way I could earn a living and not leave the house, one of the, you know, one way was to build a website and work from home. I always wanted to be there for my children. So we do have a caller on the line who has a question or a comment for you or for the conversation.
Okay.
Sean, are you on the line with us?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. Hi. My name is Sean Muir, and I'm the CEO of Be Your Own Art, and I happen to be a QMHP, a mental health counselor. And I career switched to become a counselor because I have my ex-husband has bipolar disorder. My oldest daughter, who was born, had a stroke at birth, has borderline personality disorder trait, major depressive disorder, and bipolar disorder. And then I just found that my youngest daughter has it. I want to say to the speaker, I praise you for your fearlessness of being able to step forward and say, this is me. As a parent of children with mental health issues, and then I happen to be a clinician, it's extremely difficult because I know all the signs. But the thing is that until you can get a person to own that thing, is really nothing you can do. My oldest has had I swear to you I've lost count. I would have to look at the records how many suicide attempts that she's had. And I still think that everything rolls back to a shift in mindset before you're able to really, accept what you're dealing with, before you're able to really be proactive to get the help. I still have family members right now that do not embrace, you know, they say, oh, well, especially black people, oh, we're going to pray about it. You can pray, but if the actions don't align with the intentions, it really doesn't matter. And I just want to say to the speaker, you said earlier about not having, you know, getting permission to take care of yourself. You don't need permission. And I say this to everyone that's listening. You don't need permission from anybody, no damn body, to take care of you. You should come first. You should work on you and take care of you first because, I mean, if your mind is not in place, if your heart is not in place, you really don't have anything to give back to anyone. But I just want to say I commend you. And I didn't know you were locally in the area. I would love to, you know, to be in contact with you more because it can be challenging being the mother of adult children with mental health issues because I really work hard on taking care of me because I don't know when I have to drop everything to take care of them. And one of my oldest daughter, I'll be basically assisting for the rest of her life.
Wow.
So it is a major, but the thing is though, I don't want pity party. The thing is, life
right.
is what you make it. And if your perception is that it's doom and gloom and, oh, my God, it's bad, then that's what you're going to get. And that's what I really stress with Be Your Own Art. You walk in things the way that you perceive that they be. You set the tone for that. So with the African-American community, and I find this when I'm working with clients in my QMHP business, that people have this really bad stigma about mental health issues, but the thing is, nothing can stop you from living your life limitless but you and your perception of whatever that thing is that you're going through. All of us have some shit we got to deal with. I've overcome codependency. That caused me to have bits of depression at times, and I was on Lexapro. But then once I started shifting my mindset and working on myself, mind, body, and spirit, and transforming my life, mind, body, and spirit, I ain't need the medicine no more.
Mm-hmm.
Life is my medicine. So I just say to her, I commend you, and to anyone that's out there listening, if you are feeling hopeless, you aren't alone, but you really need to go ahead and step outside of the stereotypes and stop worrying about how people are going to perceive you and go and get some help for you. So I appreciate this show today. It's really this is something that's very close to home for me. How can I reach out to the speaker today?
Thank you so much. I'm super active on social media. If you Google Good Girl Chronicles, I'm on YouTube, Facebook, Blogspot. My email address is teamgoodgirl84@gmail.com. And I am always there, even if it's just to speak with people or talk to them about what has worked for me, or if you would like a speaker to come to where you are and just kind of talk about the things that has helped me stay in recovery, connecting with other people and hearing their struggles is part of my recovery also. It helps me realize that I'm not alone out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I love my parents. They're very educated, wonderful people, but it was hard for them to see me, this very type A functioning person, fall into depression. And I mean, I lost all of myself. And we were going through our own family issues, and it was really, really difficult for them to love me through that. They tried their mm-hmm. best. I will agree
parent,
that.
It is difficult, especially with my daughter. I don't know if you know much about borderline, but they are, I love you, I hate you, I love you, I hate you.
Right.
It's like a light switch, however they want to feel about you. And if you don't stay firm in, first of all, loving yourself and knowing that, you know, you still got to love you and definitely the boundaries. I'm like the boundary queen now, but I found it difficult because I started feeling sorry for them. And I say to any parents or anyone, if you're family members, don't feel sorry for them. Don't feel sorry for the person with mental health issues.
Sean, I just wanted to ask, you said you were this is Sharifa, but that you were the boundary queen. Can you give us some examples of some of the boundaries you were able to set to make this a healthier situation for everyone involved?
Well, like my oldest daughter, her because she's had so many suicide attempts, she would quickly say, if you don't, blah, 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 I'm going to kill myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I always gave in. I always gave in. Then I don't do that shit no more. I say to her, you know
what? What do you do now?
Whatever. Now I let her know that, you know, your choices are your choices, but your choices will impact other people, and you have to deal with that. And I told her, I don't know if this is therapeutically correct, and me being a counselor, I don't know if it's therapeutically correct, but it's worked for me with my daughter. I say to her, you know, if you are successful at a suicide attempt, it's going to really hurt a lot of people. I said, but what if you're not, and you have to sit in that state for the rest of your life, and you know what's going on? How is that going to make you feel? And so because she's very smart, she said, damn, I never thought about it that way. And so for us in our household, now my youngest daughter is really struggling with accepting her illness, and she's not compliant with medication. And, you know, the life is kind of spiraling out of control, but I am still just there. She does the, you know, I need. And I set boundaries with that, because if you're not sowing into the pot, you're not going to keep taking out of the pot. And what are you doing to get whatever it is that you need? So, I heard you say that, you know, for a person to, if you see a person struggling, to go and say something to them, that is not, that's very challenging, because no one wants to feel judged. No one wants to feel ostracized. No one wants to feel that they are labeled. And especially when you say people with children, their first thing, like when we come into homes to help, they think that we're trying to take their children. So they would rather hide the issue. And usually they mask it with drinking, drugs, sex, or some other type of, they add another limitation on top of the limitations that they already struggle with. But I still go back, and I'm very deep into fitness. So I had to really work on my mindset, my health, my eating, in order to deal with, because when you have children with mental health issues, that's like everybody in the household going through that.
Right.
And then I was married to a man with bipolar disorder and major depressive disorder that was not actively seeking help. So he drank, and he strip clubbed. They were his drugs. And I had to say, a way that I set boundaries, I had to leave that marriage. I had to leave that situation. And I still support him. You know, we're still friends. But I had to say no to that shit and yes to me. And that was an 18-year relationship, a 10-year marriage. But I was dying inside. I had two children with mental health issues, and it's hereditary. That's another thing. Mental health issues are hereditary. And him, and then his mother had bipolar disorder. I didn't know this when I started dating this man. Did not know that.
Right.
So
they most likely tried to hide it.
Well, you know, I was young at the time, so when you're dealing with codependency, you think you can fix the whole world. So the signs were there. Now that I'm able to look back hindsight now, the signs were there. But I was stuck in a state of codependency because I had my S on my chest, and Sean was going to fix everything. But the thing is that Sean was not working on what she needed to fix within herself and deal with her own limitations. And that's when I began the process of putting together Be Your Own Art, because I needed to work on my own authenticity. I needed to walk in my truth, and I needed to heal mind, body, and spirit. And so I put together my own life coaching approach, which thanks be to God, I was able to heal me, but I've been able to bless other people through that same process.
Yeah.
But I needed to, because dealing with all of that, I mean, trust me, I know you are struggling as a person with mental health issues. Trust me, as a mother, that is impacting your parents just as much. I promise you.
Right.
I promise you. So it'll be good for you to encourage them. I sought therapy. And another thing, when I went to, they had parenting support groups. They were the most depressing things I went to one session. They were depressive, because I went in and I was like, okay, well, what are we going to do? You know, and all of the parents were on more medication than the damn children. And this was one group out of Barry Robinson.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's challenging. And then our mental health issues are hereditary. And, you know, and I've learned from my struggle that a lot of life is surviving and enduring. And a lot of how we persevere is how we endure the hard times. And I feel that survival is a choice. Yes, I had a mental illness, but I had to choose to accept it. I had to choose to live in recovery. I did choose to go to the psychiatrist. So a lot of that is a personal thing. And the biggest mm-hmm. reason why I tell my story is to help normalize it so people can move to a place of acceptance sooner to get treatment and stay in recovery.
I understand and definitely support that.
Absolutely.
What support is there for parents of teens and children with mental health issues? Like I said, I went to a support group, and that was the most depressive thing I've ever been to in all my life. Mm-hmm. Do you know of any support?
There aren't a lot of support groups like that, although I've just become associated with NAMI, which is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. They have some meetup groups here in Virginia Beach, which I'm going to start going to. They actually have things for parents, kind of healthy things to kind of show parents how to love your child or a loved one through a mental crisis. And so I haven't been to those physically, but I'm going to start going to see, you know, how to educate other people on how to love someone through that type of situation. Because you're right, it is extremely, extremely, extremely hard.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to get connected with you, and I'll tell you what I learned about NAMI, and hopefully
are you
able
Facebook?
To help you. I am on Facebook.
Are you on
yes,
Facebook?
Ma'am.
What's your name on Facebook?
So my name on Facebook is Lauren Hope. I also have a business page, which is Good Girl Chronicles, LLC.
Okay. Thank you so much. We definitely will be connecting. It's been an excellent show today.
Thank you for joining us in the Punch Bowl this morning, Sean. As always, we appreciate your voice, your support. Thank you for sharing your story. Thank you, Lauren, for sharing your story, for being courageous enough to join us in the Punch Bowl and to be honest. You know, sometimes it's difficult for people to simply just be honest, to tell the truth about what they feel, what they're going through, what they've experienced, to actually say, I have attempted suicide. I mean, depression alone, but to even admit that you've attempted suicide and you've attempted suicide multiple times, that takes real courage. That takes courage, and I just want to applaud you for having the courage to join us in the Punch Bowl today, to have the courage to speak to other people. And, again, it goes back to what I was saying about you have to love something or someone more than you love yourself. And I think that's what you're doing is you're loving all of the people that you speak to. You loving them enough to say, you know what, I want you to be here. So even if you aren't sure that you want to be here on this earth, I want you to be here. So let me use my strength and my courage and my energy to help you through whatever it is that you're going through. And I love that you're using your faith and your strength in order to help somebody else, because that's really at the end of the day what we're here for, to be a blessing to someone else. And that's what we're here at Punch TV Studios and Changing the Conversation, is to be a blessing to somebody else. A bottle of youth. And a bottle of you for me have been a blessing to us. They reached out to their community, to their friends, and said, you know what, you have an amazing story. You really need to share your story with the world. And so thank you, Lauren Hope, for joining us this morning in the Punch Bowl. Thank you to a bottle of you, a bottle of you for me. You guys rock. You own the bookie. We love you.
We love you. Thank you.
We love you more.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lauren and Sean.
Thank you.
You are so welcome. So thank you to all our listeners. This has been an amazing show. This has been an amazing show. This is a show you want to take the link and share it on your social media. Invite me, Sharifa Hardy, co-host of Changing the Conversation on social media. And we're going to continue to change the conversation because here at Punch TV Studios, we are changing the world. So until tomorrow, until next time, have a wonderful day.
Thank you for listening to Changing the Conversation with Punch TV Studios CEO Joseph Collins. Tune in Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time as we continue to change the conversation in contemporary media. To be a guest or to share your thoughts on Changing the Conversation, visit Nabuki.com today. Don't miss out on the opportunity to be a part of the company that's revolutionizing media. Visit PunchTVStudios.com to become a part owner at $1 per share.